Now, it is indeed a rare thing in this time of hip detachment and ironic or hermetic withdrawal from the pressing issues of the day to have four such publicly outspoken and passionately engaged poets on a single bill. The voices you will hear tonight are quite singular, but they all speak truth to power. And as regards the status quo, they are all deeply and radically and profoundly subversive. Not just politically subversive, but linguistically, metaphysically, spiritually, and for all I know, ergonomically subversive. So we are going to begin. My first encounter with the work of Michael Brownstein was reading his novel, The Touch, a very hot, very harrowing, and ultimately very disturbing, but in a good way. He is a consummate man of letters, but what I'd like to bring to your attention is his most recent book, an extraordinary hybrid of poetry and prose titled World on Fire. Now, you remember when someone asked Mohandas Gandhi what he thought of Western civilization, and Gandhi replied, "I think it would be a good idea." Well, in World on Fire, Brownstein examines in minute and exquisite and exhaustive detail all the insidious ways in which the culture of global capitalism keeps us in thrall, strip mining and clear cutting not only the environment, but also our minds and our souls. The book dances at the brink of despair, but never succumbs to it. It never loses hope that we can turn things around. World on Fire is a most brave, most vital, most necessary book, and I urge you to check it out. Please welcome Michael Brownstein.
Thanks. This is great. Only took about 14 months to arrange this, and I'm really happy it's happening. I'm going to read three poems, and then maybe, if there's a little time, I'll stick in a fourth one. This, I'm going to do something. This first poem is called Things You Can't Google. You can't Google what your mother whispered in your father's ear at the moment of conception. And you can't Google how your father has struggled for years to break free from the numbing routine that buried him. You can't Google why your mother smothered you as a child with her love, changing the course of the universe forever in a way no astronomer is able to explain. And you can't Google where the innocence of children went or why five-year-olds are fiercely competitive and covered with brand names from head to foot. You can't Google the reason you blew it with the guy or gal who meant more to you than anyone else you ever met and who you've lost track of for decades in spite of looking for him or her always. You're unable to Google how uneasy you are about growing old alone, no matter how many people surround you, because you can't Google why only at the moment of your passing will your loved ones look up from their screens. You can't Google how much you hate the sound of mice trapped in the walls of your little castle, swaying in the solar wind. And you can't Google how far it is in interstellar space before you reach the refuge of a jolly and hospitable planet. You can't Google the identity of the entities crowding around the windows of your castle, making faces at you and laughing while you slowly run out of food and water and air, or why the last black rhinoceros is made to disappear so that some insecure male on cruise control can fool himself about the priapic qualities of powdered rhino horn. You can't Google why William Blake, seeing heaven in a grain of sand, has been replaced by you seeing hell in a grain of plastic. And you can't Google if poetry might be the only pure product left, poets like sacred prostitutes giving it all away, while the rest of the world drives a harder and harder and harder bargain. But it's also true, there's no way to Google the sublime mystery of life, why the plant realm so helpful to us, or why monkeys in the jungle defecate with ease, while humans in cities remain hopelessly constipated. And for sure you can't Google if the fact that we see so many colors is proof of God's existence. Thank you. This next poem is called Say Goodbye. This poem is dedicated to the millions of children on the march yesterday, today, and tomorrow. Refugees drowning in the alphabet soup of nation states, running from country to country, their lives a mashup of violence and fear. But our turn's coming soon, right here in the good old US of A. So pack your bags and say goodbye to the upper middle class palace you've been guarding nonstop, or else coveting enviously, because the big wave's rolling in for real, and it ain't going to spare Pittsburgh, and the only way to survive will be to travel light on every level. Your time as refugees is just around the bend, and you'll be out on the road with nothing more than you can carry. Out on the road, called all sorts of names by those lucky few, spared for maybe another week or two. They're still living in their gimcrack apartments, their lights and water on. And they're leaning out of windows, calling you freeloader and vermin and rapist and terrorist. You who are just trying to keep from croaking from one day to the next. So you better say goodbye to your carefully nurtured career and obsessive plans for your children's success. Say goodbye to your dear friends and detested enemies, to your favorite vacation spots, your cherished barking and chirping pets. Say goodbye to your bank cards and your as yet undelivered driverless car. Say goodbye to the movie of the week and the lover of the month, and to your mailbox by the side of the road, waiting for the letters that will never arrive. And be sure to say a special goodbye to your impressive obituary on the front page of the New York Times. Say goodbye to your treasured tableware and stunning outfits and your furniture and potted plants, and say goodbye to Zumba classes and foodie extravaganzas and little packets of heroin and pill boxes of painkillers. And don't forget the Thanksgiving dinners you won't be able to eat, the piles of Christmas presents you'll have to abandon. And how can you not say goodbye to your Easter bunny, all covered in chocolate, even though he's hopping disconsolately down the muddy track in the rain, trying to keep up with you as you trudge off to nowhere with a big smile on your face, which, until this very moment, would have been seen as perfectly insane, but is now your most precious possession, the only proof you have that you're still alive. Thank you. Thank you. I went through this whole thing to make, you know, we were going to read more or less each of us around 20 minutes, but I mean, there's no cutoff or anything. But I mean, and I brought this up, this clock, and now I don't know when I started, so. Jesus knows, but I don't know if he'll tell me. Now this next is Carrie Harrison here. I'm reading this for him. He is here. This is called Let's Burn the Flags of All Nations. It's a little longer. Let's burn the flags of all nations. No more nation states. No more patriotism. Try it. You'll like it. Welcome to the post-national future, coming sooner than you think. Because we've had enough of endless statements like this one by India's environment minister, national interest trumps all else. Or this one by the president of Turkey, no one should test the power of the state. But why not test the power of the state? Why does an abstraction come before the needs and desires of real people? What if there were no Israel, no China, no Indonesia, no Iraq, no Iran, no United States, too radical for you? Maybe you'd rather remain a glutton for punishment, continue swallowing non-negotiable declarations, such as the following: no government allows any organization to intervene in its internal affairs. But, nation-states are not the same as people. Mayans or Amazonians or Tibetans will get along perfectly well without artificial nation states to define them, because people don't wage war, governments do. War presents itself as necessary for self-preservation, when in fact it's necessary for self-gratification. As long as we identify with nation states, we know ourselves only by what we oppose, not by who we are. And who are we? For a few years, we're alive on this planet. Same heart, same mind, same eyes. That's it. Or do you keep turning a blind eye to developments such as the following? A Botswana judge has ruled that Bushmen who return to their ancestral lands in the Central Kalahari Game Reserve are not allowed to drill wells for water, meaning they have to walk up to 380 kilometers to fetch water in one of the driest places on Earth, while tourists who stay at the new tourist lodge on the reserve enjoy the use of a swimming pool and bar, and Gem Diamond's planned mine there will be free to use all the water it needs on condition none is given to the Bushmen. Bushman spokesman, Jumanda Gakalbone: if we don't have water, how are we expected to live? No human illegal. No more national borders generated out of fear, out of a total failure of trust. Arbitrary fictions laid down on a landscape, borders which in reality don't exist. And if you believe they exist, tell me, what of all those who came before, swearing fealty to other flags at the cost of their lives? Down through history, conquerors, pillagers, colonizers, criminals. Who are we to claim any land as ours? Go back far enough, everyone's illegal. Let's burn the flags of all nations, release the stranglehold of the nation state, cloud cover for demagogues and racists, for America firsters or Russia firsters, etc. What are they afraid of? That they'll melt into all us other humans? But like it or not, that's exactly what's happening. Reality, the internet, everyone alive today, only our IP addresses, no fixed location, floating in space, just like the planet. No more nation states benefiting those in power, mimicking individual egos in combat, battling for vanishing resources, for territory, Lebensraum. Using the sentimental hook of tribal identification to maintain order. The United States of America, a rank hallucination. Russia, Myanmar, Nigeria, you name it, hallucinations generated for profit and control, for suppression of the human spirit. But the human spirit knows no boundaries, no ID cards, no cradle-to-grave oversight. When we step outside the trance and walk among the trees, listen to the birds, do we think they belong to something called the US of A? Do they fall in line behind Old Glory? And around the globe, hundreds of Old Glories, each defended to the death, tears streaming down the cheeks of patriots who drop their flag only to pick up a weapon and murder those unlucky enough to be carrying a different flag. Yeah, it's against the law to burn the American flag. And how many other flags? 192 member states of the United Nations, from Afghanistan. When will we ever learn? to Zimbabwe, the less said the better. Outmoded nationalism, we're outgrowing it. No more electrified fences lit by floodlights of paranoia. No more making the nation state safe for surveillance. No more patriots, heads held high, legitimizing a myth of separation. The myth that we humans, who started as a single band in the prehistoric night, can now act only from our differences, rationalizing mayhem and extermination, forgetting who profits from separation, the corporate, political, and military leaders of phantom entities founded in our name. Let's burn the flags of all nations. Either we join together, or we're a bunch of dead pharaohs lined up in a row, wrapped in shiny metallic tape, reflecting our shriveled narratives back to us. We lie there, not moving, in a cage instead of a playground. It's time to risk everything, open the gates, tear down the fences, shred our passports, roam wherever we like, along rivers and mountains without end, because we ourselves are those rivers and mountains. No human illegal, Syrians, Iraqis, Ethiopians, Mexicans, Guatemalans, let them come. Let them swarm over gringo stands' borders. What are we afraid of? That they'll find out what we're really like? Afraid they'll compromise the American way of life? What is the American way of life? Everything for sale, every last one of us hustling something, methamphetamine trailers lighting up the high plains night, strip malls from sea to shining sea, all for a second slice of virtual pizza, while the other nation states out there are busy copying us. But these campesinos, why are they stampeding across our borders if their village-based mode of survival were still functioning? After corporate capital's scorched earth policy, after the bait and switch called free trade, after the drug violence fueled by our own cocaine habit, after the bombs falling out of the sky, do you really think they'd leave their families and ancestral lands for a life of drudgery in the icy heart of the North? Can you imagine what those who've risked their lives to cross the border are thinking as they clean our toilets and mow the lawns outside our cheesy McMansions while we sprawl in the family room, sucking up doses of radiation from our plasma screens? But what if, on the contrary, the campesinos secretly envy us? What if they want their deracinated children to grow into big-time consumers just like us? What if they can't wait till their kids get lost in celebrity culture, turning into dark-skinned versions of our tight white selves? Dios mío. And democracy, our claim to fame, time for a reality check. Do we know who represents us? Holograms assembled by generations of spin doctors and handlers? If you doubt it and have enough pull, approach the leader of any nation state. Doesn't matter what his or her politics are. The only question is, how deep into trance is this person? Wave your hand in front of the face. Watch the eyes light up. When you say you'll vote for it, watch the eyes go cold. When you say you won't. But things can be different. In fact, at this very moment, the Rojava Revolution is happening, radical democracy in northern Syria. Three cantons translating resistance against state oppression into a new political model of stateless democracy. Inspired by the Kurdish women's movement, social ecology rejecting the nation state as unifier, dispensing with the dominant structure of patriarchal capitalism, and instead basing itself on principles of coexistence. Three cantons in northern Syria, Afrin, Cizre, and Kobani, surrounded by ISIS on the one side and the Turkish state on the other, both bent on killing what was proclaimed by the social contract of January 2014, a confederation of autonomous regions. While governments around the world continue to follow the Turkish lead and brand them as terrorists, denying them help, denying them arms, but Afrin is surviving, Cizre is surviving, and Kobani almost perished, but Kobani is surviving. Meanwhile, back stateside, left and right, red and blue enforce the age-old delusion that we can get somewhere only at the expense of others? But haven't you noticed? The game is never won. Over the centuries, always a sense of impending emergency, of corruption and betrayal. The open field of existence, tricked into gigantic hoardings of mine and yours. The question is, do we have what it takes to clear the deck and work out a new life? That's the only reason astronauts were allowed up in space, to see global intelligence unfolding, a vast display of ecologies, humans and plants, animals and spirits, sky and ocean. No more nation states, no more patriotism. Try it, you'll like it. Thank you.
I should mention that all four poets have books for sale in the rear, thanks to Jackie and the Golden Notebook. I knew Ed Sanders long before I met him. I was there at the levitation of the Pentagon in fall of 1967, when Ed led 500,000 of us in chanting, "Out, demons, out! Out, demons, out." 48 years later, he is still riding full tilt against the military-industrial surrealist complex and taking his own advice in refusing to be burnt out. Noli in spiritu combuere. Along with the late Tully Kupferberg, he created the proto-punk, proto-folk rock, proto-performance poetry band The Fugs, which has been a vehicle of spirited resistance to the corporate culture of planetary cannibalism. He's written novels, short stories, poetry, songs, and manifestos, and in August 2001, he was ceremoniously named Poet Laureate of Woodstock. The official decree cited him as a poet of, quote, "local, regional, national, global, and intergalactic repute," and acknowledged him as a spiritual descendant of Sappho, Blake, and Whitman. Please welcome Ed Sanders.
Thank you, Mikhail. I don't deserve all that, but
I'll take it.
I have been working. Well, in 71 and 70 and 71 and onward, I wrote a history of the Manson Group, and in writing that, it's quite a lengthy book. I learned some things about the assassination of Robert Kennedy from some law enforcement officers. One of the first things I learned in investigating the Manson family is I had to get along with the police. All through my life, beginning in high school, I've trained myself to hide the beer so we could get by, and then in the 60s, hide the joint so that we could get by the police. But when I investigated the Manson Group, I had to reach out to the police and was overjoyed to find that a lot of them were liberal and they're not all evil, and there's a lot of great cops out there. Anyway, I learned some things about Robert Kennedy. So in 1975, first year we were up here in Woodstock, I started a poem about the final 2 years of the life of Robert Kennedy. And I compiled 13 banker's boxes full of files. I really went and tried to get the real story. And now it's a poem. It's a 300 and some page poem. I have a book coming out in a couple of months, a biography of Sharon Tate. And this biography by Da Capo Press, this biography will tell some of the story, some of the timeline of the Robert Kennedy tragedy. So I'm going to read from Robert Kennedy, an investigative poem. Traces the final 2 years of his lives. And I've learned some information from police, but also from Ciaran Ciaran's defense attorney, William Pepper, who's dug up some new things about what really happened in that terrible kitchen on June 5th, 1968. During his final campaign, RFK had mentioned to a number of close friends that once he were president, he would go after those who had conspired to kill his brother in 1963. Here's the story of Robert Kennedy's final day. He and Ethel had stayed the previous night at the home of John and Evans Frankenheimer on the beach in Malibu. Robert Kennedy's final speech. Ambassador Hotel, Los Angeles, June 4th, 5th, 1968. The Kennedy suite toward midnight was packed with favored friends and campaigners. Just before going down to the ballroom, speaking with a close assistant, he whispered that he thought he should tell Senator McCarthy if he should withdraw and support him, quote, "I'll make him Secretary of State." In the final minutes in his suite, he chatted with Bud Schulberg and some of his staff on what to say in his victory speech. Then Kennedy was speaking with civil rights hero John Lewis. "Wait for me," Kennedy said to Lewis. "I'll be back in 15 or 20 minutes." To John Lewis, RFK looked so happy he could have floated out of the room. He had a gulp of ginger ale, scanned himself in a mirror, then he was urged to go down. As he left, he asked that Al Lowenstein, the organizer of the 1967 Dump Johnson movement, he asked that Al Lowenstein be telephoned in New York right after the victory speech. RFK had used the same path downward as back in Oregon, and recently in San Diego, down a service elevator, through the kitchen, and up to the stage for his victory speech. There was a sort of gridlock in the hallway headed toward the elevators. He encountered his 11-year-old daughter, Courtney, and passed a couple of minutes asking her about what her day had been like. He stopped again for a brief chat with famous columnist Joseph Kraft, who had advised that RFK abandon the primaries in the campaign. Kennedy nodded at Kraft and smiled, then walked onward. They went down a freight elevator and through the kitchen, then up an enclosed stairway, and onto the utterly packed stage overlooking the overflowing embassy room. The winner walked onto the stage with Doris Huerta, co-founder with Cesar Chavez of the National Farm Workers Association, and escorted by Olympic decathlon champ Rayford Johnson and pro football star Roosevelt Greer, plus Ethel and some of their children. The applause and excitement was enormous. There were jubilant young men in Kennedy straw hats and women in white blouses, red Kennedy sashes, and blue skirts. It was a time of playful joy. The winner first congratulated Don Drysdale of the Dodgers, who just won a three-hit shutout. He pitched his sixth straight shutout tonight, and I hope we'll have his good fortune in our campaign. RFK thanked those who'd helped him. It was very hot in the ballroom. The speech would run about 12 and a half minutes, well enough time to place the kill team into position. After congratulating Don Drysdale, the winner of California's 178 delegates congratulated McCarthy. He pointed out that the, quote, country wants to move in a different direction. We want to deal with our own problems within our country, and we want peace in Vietnam, to great applause. He was looking forward to a dialogue or a debate with Humphrey, quote, on what direction we want to go in, what we are going to do in the rural areas of our country, what we are going to do with those who still suffer within the United States from hunger, and whether we're going to continue the policies that have been so unsuccessful in Vietnam. Then he finished. We are a great country, an unselfish country, a compassionate country, and I intend to make that my basis for running. And so my thanks to all of you. And now on to Chicago, and let's win there. The crowd chanted in a powerful rhythm, "We want Bobby, we want Bobby." At the last moment, perhaps through perfidy, someone changed the senator's planned departure from the stage down an enclosed stairway to a press conference in a nearby room so that he was left unguarded, his bodyguards not at his side, as he was escorted in the bodyguardless gloom out through the back of the stage and down a ramp to the swinging doors to the kitchen, where he paused to shake a hand. Siron Siron was taken by the woman in the polka dot dress to an ante room by the stage while RFK was speaking. Harvard professor Dr. Daniel Brown, in his report in 2011 on 60 hours of interviewing and hypnotizing Siron Siron, stated that Siron recalls being led to a room off the stage while Kennedy was giving his victory speech. Quote, the woman in the polka dot dress then took Siron by the hand and led him into the anteroom behind the stage where Senator Kennedy was speaking. There they found some coffee, at which point Siron begins to feel attracted to her. They are interrupted by an official with a suit and clipboard. The official tells them that they cannot stay in the anteroom for security reasons, and the official then tells the girl in the polka dot dress to go to the kitchen. Siron to his hypnotist, Dr. Daniel Brown, quote, all of a sudden they tell us we have to move. This guy comes by wearing a suit, a big full face, seems like he was in charge. He wasn't wearing any uniform, wearing a suit. She acknowledges his instruction. He motions toward the pantry. The man said, you guys can go back in this room. I followed her. She led. I was a little like a puppy after her. I wanted to go back to the mariachi band, but she went straight to the pantry area. With my being so attracted to her, I felt I was just glued to her. Siron was clueless, maybe drugged. She and the, quote, official led him to the very place that the assassination was to occur. As I said, RFK's victory speech was just long enough to get the kill team surely in place. The patsy, Mr. Saran, by the tray stacker with polka dot, the actual killer either waiting by the ramp leading down to the kitchen pantry swinging door or waiting just inside. 78 people were in the pantry when RFK came through the door. On the right was a large floor-to-ceiling ice-making machine. Near the ice machine was a low tray stacker upon which Siran and the polka-dotted woman had been standing. There was a young woman named Lisa Orso, a high school student in San Diego who was standing by the door of the pantry as RFK entered the pantry. Suddenly, she was shoved behind, and a young man pushed in front of her. Quote, I thought it was going to be a waiter. And it looked like he was trying to get in there to shake the senator's hand. It was Saran Saran. She saw a flash from the gun. Lisa Orso also spotted another person, a blonde guy wearing a gray suit with a gun in his hand. It was not Saran, and not wearing a uniform. RFK researcher, good researcher, Philip Melanson, interviewed another witness who saw a guy with dark wavy hair and a gray suit shoot his gun once or twice and run out of the pantry. He was seen with Siran earlier in the evening. These are all tapes that are at the RFK archive at the University of Massachusetts, Dartmouth. Polka Dot and Siran were talking. Then Siran dismounted the table. As he fired at RFK, Siran thought he was shooting at circle targets at a firing range. In Harvard hypnotist Dr. Daniel Brown's report, in the filing to reopen the RFK case, Siran thought, quote, thought he was firing at stationary circle targets at a firing range. He did not know he was firing at Senator Kennedy at the time of the assassination. Siran had told Dr. Brown that he had gone target shooting the afternoon before the shooting with the same man who had previously programmed him to write his anti-RFK diary entries. Siran was a ham radio buff and told to this Harvard hypnotist, Dr. Brown, that his programmer had talked with him and programmed him via ham radio. Dr. Brown, on the night of the assassination, all that was required was for Siran Saran to show up at a designated place induced by post-hypnotic suggestion, be led to the site by a handler, and then adopt range mode, unquote, upon cue. Kennedy supporter Dr. Marcus McBloom, Dr. Marcus McBroom was at the ambassador, arriving about 10:30, entered the ambassador room via the kitchen. The FBI interviewed McBroom on 7/11/68 and stated while he was going through the kitchen, he observed Siran sitting on a table in the kitchen. McBroom joined the celebration at the embassy room and was invited by Gene Smith to join the private after party at the discotheque, The Factory. McBroom heard several gunshots fired. Then he saw Roosevelt, Greer, and others trying to dislodge the .22 from Siran's hand. McBroom then raced to locate a doctor. And while running into the embassy room, he stated he remembers seeing a Caucasian female, about 25, moving toward the exit. This woman was wearing a white dress with black polka dots. The only unusual thing he noticed about this woman, that she appeared much calmer than anyone else in the room and appeared to be trying to leave as soon as possible. And Siron was never, according to a group of witnesses who testified at the grand jury, closer than 3 to 6 feet from RFK. Now, the researchers I work with think they've located the actual RFK shooter. He has a house in Berkeley, California, at age 75. And doesn't want to be bothered. But the coroner, Noguchi of Los Angeles, found because of burn marks that the gun that killed Robert Kennedy was placed right up against Kennedy's head. And the witnesses, a bunch of witnesses, 10 witnesses, said that Siron was never closer than 3 to 6 feet. Working in the kitchen and pantry was young Juan Romero, who wanted to shake Kennedy's hand. Just as the victor clasped his hand, there was a flash of heat, and suddenly RFK was on the floor. "He was looking up at the ceiling," Romero later recalled, "and I thought he'd banged his head. I said, 'Are you okay? Can you get up?' One eye, his left eye, was twitching, and one leg was shaking. Romero slid his hand under the back of Kennedy's head, tried to raise him, and he felt blood trickling through his fingers. Ethel had rushed to the scene and then pushed Juan away. He asked if he could give Bobby his rosary beads. I pressed them into his hand, but they wouldn't stay. So I tried wrapping them around his thumb. When they were wheeling him away, I saw the rosary beads still hanging off his hand. Robert Kennedy, he fell down. He fell down by the ice machine. By the ice machine with the rosary in his hand. He lay by the ice machine. By the ice machine. Thank you.
For many years, and quite possibly throughout many incarnations, Peter Lamborn Wilson, a.k.a. Hakim Bey, has fearlessly opposed whatever system or practice or ideology serves to enchain people rather than liberate them. In recent years, he has been a voice in the wilderness of the great American mall, railing against technopathocracy, the rule of sick machines, which is to say, in a word, the rule of mammon, the great god of money. He is an inside agitator, an ontological anarchist, an alchemist, and so much more than any of those ultimately reductive labels. And his presence on this program turns this gallery into a temporary autonomous zone. What Yeats said of Jonathan Swift, we can apply to Peter. Imitate him if you dare, world-besotted traveler, he serves human liberty. Please welcome Peter Lamborn Wilson.
Well, that was my politics. Now I'm free to do something else. I'm going to read a sonnet sequence, but they're not really sonnets. I call them pseudo-sonnets. They're 14-liners, I guess you could say. And this little collection I put together for Robert and Charlotte Kelly on their website called Metembison, which has a lot of great poetry on it. You could go and find it. I called it Episcopalian Luddite Sonnets. For better or worse, I'm still an Episcopalian along with my 17 other religions. It starts with a quote from one of my favorite obscure philosophers, J.G. Heyman, the Magus of the North, as he was called. It's the subtitle of one of his books, Compiled for the Boredom of the Public by a Lover of Boredom. And the first poem, by a nice coincidence, is dedicated to Ann Waldman. Erasmus Darwin, not Charles, fuck the smug, mean-spiritedness of orthodox neo-Darwinians, those middle-brow science-olators of secular inhumanism. Bad metaphysics, beep, 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 bad metaphysics. Masquerading as objectivity, posing as courage in the struggle against a dead horse. I receive scroll from eminent Buddhist poetess. She says, what is real? I propose a rough ontology. Everything's as real as it needs to be and as real as it's going to get. Let's save time by sparing the applause, if any, until the end. So we, give me a little extra time to read. This one's called Nihil Obstat. Let's call the bomb round and black with sizzling nipple, classical ravichol model devil's egg. And as for the poem, let it be a villanelle, whatever the hell a villanelle is. However thin you slice it, like black 100-year-old egg, down to the phonemes, or blow it up in black powder clouds, bristling with thunderbolts, still the result's the same when seen from the winner's POV at the end of history's cock-a-doodle-doo, i.e., ho-hum, another lawyer, another lamppost, and still the Illuminati call the shots. The caged bird formulates no hypotheses. How flowers come into focus when you know their names, purple loosestrife or Joe Pieweed or snowdrops like spilled moonstone. He has machines for his amazement. The very bars are woven of music down to the bone. He never marvels how the air has ceased to tickle and caress, or how the flowers sleep like fragments of mirror. Suet and seeds arrive, and shit is removed. But how or whence, no caged bird need ever inquire. Schizophrenically unsatiated with just one name, we accrete cognomens, AKAs, previous incarnations, unborn evil twins, nom de plume, angelic booming titles. Brain as fairy bride. Round and around the palace of memory we drift like decaying gentry and Turgenev. Brain as gas bubble, decayed, fish head, phosphorescent enough to read the face of a pocket watch at midnight by. We is several others, but I are ambulatory, thanks to our Episcopalian guile and catholicity of fetishes. An amusing hell, of devils with good taste in wine. Ah, the inflation of ego, streaming oceanic sensations, pseudo-shamanistic hydrocarbons, nothing can compare with the blimp of self expanding like a frog's throat the size of Ulster County. Croak, swollen membrane, bubble, moon, gaseous and warmly ecumenical, spherical miracle, Ponzi scheme far-reaching as Saturn's rings, tenuous, puffed taut by bellows pump or boreal cheek to a stretched, soapy conceptual blowfish huger than the whole solar system, and so on till pop! Then, for some uncountable time, silence. But finally, reassembles back in the kitchen, still surrounded by unpaid bills. Beam me up for Chuck Stein, but he's not here. Among the last few war babies conceived before Nagasaki, I would insist that any messiah or even reincarnated bodhisattva have glamour and sex appeal, however clandestine and unspeakable. Physical beauty is soteriological signage. There are no ugly prophets. And even the exceptions seem Socratically seductive, goatish, and Saturnian to an almost, supernatural degree. True saviors would satiate their devotees with blue beams of lubricious tantra, now Radha, now Krishna, according to the chela's taste and proclivities. It's always a greasy pack of cards, as Flaubert would say, and vital that the gypsy believes she's scamming the client so her subconscious remains free to pick up real emanations and forebodings. Frankly, I'd rather not know. If you don't eat the cookie, the fortune won't happen. Anyway, Chinese communists used to insert dire prognostications, character slurs. Not once was I ever promised anything marvelous in the surrealist sense. My tantric guru claimed he could pick lottery numbers, but he died dirt poor. I write also ghazals. They're also 14-liners. A ghazal is a Persian form. Comes in couplets, basically. That's all you need to know. This is the ghazal of the here and now, and not pale hands beside the shalimar. How does it happen that the poem of complaint is no longer possible, or that men have ceased in public to weep and faint from sheer emotion, perhaps due to dietary deficiency and sexual repression under early capitalism? Opium of love and religion is transformed into the Prozac of the masses, sinks without trace into bathos, like mastodon in La Brea tar pit, creepy as funeral jewelry. Only pariahs still relish such unsavory seizures. What with crow, ice, snow, and sun, a collage of heraldry chartered according to the doctrine of forged signatures at 2 minutes per diem from now till St. John's Eve, cooks up Occidental haikus, raucous with lumpen prol impedimenta from the telephone poles, brainless proclamations by Raven as barbarian harbinger of just another day in the village, but suddenly naked, like those anxiety dreams about high school. But since one is invisible, there's no shame. It's bracing as striding across some Himalayan glacier, generating yogic heat and scattering trolls with imperious gestures of shiny black wing. Deep in the sub-basement, our ideologue, not the royal nor editorial, but the schizo we, remains sourly dour on the subject of novels written without certain vowels while ever-ready hordes of huddled and teeming etceteras are being flung down pyramid steps to finance our debauch. It's cool to be cruel. With hummingbirds, torn-out hearts, hallucinogens, and flowers, a bomb in a cafe is worth a Mallarmé, maybe. Kill them all and let God sort them out, is at least a theory. If we speak in multiple tongues, not to while away the tedium with a Te Deum, but as agitprop, then one of us must weep for the death of urgency. Formerly, one stood in a beam of sun under the banner, "Was there then?" A bumper sticker of impeccable dignitas, like a cosmic tent peg, round in a round hole. But now, it's like Nietzsche's beggar. You're annoyed at yourself if you give bakshish and equally annoyed if you don't. These rays are statistically reliable, but somehow one has become subtly displaced, or square, or intermittent as a lighthouse in distress. And into the micro gap between A and B seeps an unfocused susurrus of remorse. Cults that last for a very long time accrete veridical patinas or barnacles dendrochronologically, like the U. They immortalize themselves by sucker roots, air roots, even when the original trunk, long dead, rots away, leaving a hollow column for owls or bats. Old church grounds were not planted with yews just because yews symbolize rebirth and immortality. Churchyards were planted around already ancient yews because yews are immortal and continually reborn, some in England and Ireland said to be at least 6,000 years old. Evergreen with red berries, said to be psychotropic or poisonous, often the same thing. What psychonaut will return with news from that druidic fane? Of course, there was nothing supernatural about Houdini's routines, simply the opposite of burglary. Ideological seductive as alien abduction or mental orgasm. You have something against mental orgasm? Are you bothered by the idea of sex with the invisible world? What about revenge, for instance, against the cabal that immured you in this faux Chateau d'If? Chains fall away, casket bursts open, you swim up toward that hole in the ice, that sun's eye to be reborn. I had sex in Atlantis, wrapped by aliens from inner space. Amphibian race, adept at miscegenation, irrumation, undinism, underwater, weightless, and gilled, we spilled albino caviar, opal spelt in froggy streamers of albuminesque slime. We feel no noachite tide, bring on the Antarctic meltdown, devastating to batacriophiles like us ophiolatrists, dating back to dear dead Blavatskyan days. Let the dam bust, just so long as we've drained the glands of Neptune and satiated our reptilian lusts. Guesstimate an estivation rate of 3 months on the dole, and or recourse to the fishing pole. But why no terms to denote we who devote, as well as winter, spring and fall to sweet fuck all? Marduk and his quacking minions disturb our gynandric sloth with their Arbeit mach frei and other Molochian drivel. Our Bija mantra. We're dreaming in tandem on telepathine, tucked in and bursting with secrets like a pomegranate. Ulysses, you goes away for 20 years, maybe to Troy, maybe to Sing Sing. You makes his homecoming. Dog, suitors, wife, etc. Is it credible you would set sail once again into the Atlantic? Only a Christian could be so discontented. Life is elsewhere is not a pagan sentiment. Nor am I you. You's map is cross-hatched with classical references. Ithaca, Athens, Plutarch's swamp, real bodies with imaginary names. Right when you get work, we say. The profit in a house you can't bear to sell and a place you can't bear to leave is zilch. You need a lot of poison just to get off the ground, but even more to take root in the cellar like a mushroom in Pennsylvania. Most of you underground and bigger than a whale with an agenda. Sometimes you storm the castle with pitchforks and torches, and sometimes you're the stormy, agent of the spore. Who riots for Jesus, or bread, or the lost 11 days? Nobody has such density anymore. Only an Episcopalian could understand this leaden, pewterish sky, so 17th century ethereal yet dense with fractal crust. But no one answers the phone at the parish hall, leaving us still in schism. Gray, however, is the last refuge of those who see words rather than colors. Gray, as statistical numbness blurred, unmusical, deaf to the angelic lusts of a taverner or talus. Reich spoke true. You can see orgone in the air. Everywhere you stare through such specks, just as all music ultimately is blue. On the index, without censorship, the heart blurts secrets for nothing, birthrights for pottage, too much yawp, too much wattage, no finesse, no English, no backspin. Use true names of things, and they may possess, betray, and leave you in lurches. They may show teeth. They may be part wolf. Only the nihil obstat stands between me and the abyss of clarity. Irony is my imprimatur. Double speak alone allows this stance oblique to all other angles. Silence is loquacious, if not eloquent. Stealth cracks the acme safe of language. Another ghazal. Fermentation? What's not in ferment? Every quark is a yogurt-producing bacterium. All atoms are yeast. Living bubbles are oozing out of the interstices of dry sepulchral dust. Every moment, another last trump. Siduri, barmaid to the gods, advises Gilgamesh that beer is the lost herb of immortality. Raven is the source of all champagne, as well as bread, and thus we picture him in a silk smoking jacket and a red fez. We're getting there. Just a couple more. Opal is an unlucky stone unless you happen to be born in October or with two calls. Under the South Pole star, it bundles aboriginal rays, baleful as Baylor's single eye. Opalescent steam wreathes your mossy head in strange attractors as it rises from cauldron and Paracelsian curlicues till the eye becomes a gumball for godlings to suck. An aggie iridescent with alien harmonics, an egg of Horus, poached, jackal and moon in a single globe, and fit for a devil's pinky. Odious odorous. Four or five times it's blossomed here in as many years, but it's a long stretch between reincarnations. Such rare aromas cause more pain and surprise than satisfaction. Odor of sanctities avid to awaken senses atrophied in secular blossoms. Dry seasons separate brief ambrosial nights from mirages of deodorized mountains. A bee starved by decades of nectarlessness subsisting on NutraSweet in a room wallpapered with roses, flings itself again and again against the glass. A priori, a priori, or scion for scion. We like to believe ourselves in the grip of conspiracy, noctambules absolved of all instrumentality, free to complain and explain, complain and explain, till the cows come home, or rather more likely fall prey to brain-eating cows or cattle mutilators, and don't come home. Home, which is where they can't take you in if there's no there. Give us a web of tunnels beneath the Vatican and we clam up like clams. Lock ourselves in the cellar for 100 years, studying Paracelsus. Last two. Pear cider. Nothing compares to watching a slice of the cusp between August and September drift by with wilted and riverine in-betweenness, algae on the marsh and herons on the march, fallen black walnuts smelling of expensive soap, drinking pear cider in some sylvan reserve, nestled, as realestatists say, beyond the reach of weed whackers. Ancient civilizations come to value these evanescent, untransmissible little epiphanies over the grander, grimmer peaks of history and passion. But ours is an age grown old too quickly that learned these lessons a bit too late. And the last one. What? Trade 1 hour with you for the Freemason's word? Or to be Flaubert in Egypt? Can't you sweeten the pot? It's not ingratitude for favors past that makes me ask, but sheer sweet-toothed greed. A weekend? Map of lost Dutchman's mine? Vow of silence? Sonnet sequence? You name it. You be Orpheus, and I'll be the lions and lambs, or vice versa. All I want is one more chance to be genuinely unhappy.
Thank you, Peter. Anne Waldman is, among many, many other things, the doyenne of contemporary performance poetry, the original fast-speaking woman whose house, the one she carries on her head, is always on fire. She has published more than 50 books and pamphlets, including Manatee Humanity, a deep sounding of our indissoluble bond with and our responsibilities to the other forms of animal life on this planet. She is the co-founder with Allen Ginsberg of the Jack Kerouac School for Disembodied Poetics at Naropa. She's a two-time winner of the International Poetry Championship bout in Taos, New Mexico. She was poet in residence with Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review. She was called the most exciting poet of her generation by Ted Berrigan. And she is the living, breathing, compassionately flame-spewing embodiment of William Blake's great equation that energy is eternal delight. Please welcome Anne Waldman.
Thank you so much, Michael, for these wonderful introductions, and to these three gentlemen, great honor to be reading with you, and terrific readings. I thought we could maybe take a moment to just think of these people in lockdown in Paris. Maybe most of you have heard of this awful tragedy going on as we sit here, maybe do a little tongue lin where you just sort of breathe out some kind of energy, peace, compassion to the situation, and try to breathe in some of that suffering that people are going through. I guess about an hour ago, 60 people had died. There are 4 sites that have been occupied by terrorists. Obama was in town. Anyway, you can check it out later, but let's just take a moment. So I'm going to start with something called Anthropocene Blues, and this is the newly named time we're in, replacing Holocene, a time when nothing is not affected by the hand of man. This brutal hand often also could be an incredible hand. The hand is a very magical little part of our being. In any case, all these things are so interconnected, what's going on in these dark times, and I'm kind of blaming it on the Anthropocene. Anthropocene Blues. Looked over Jordan, and what did I see? Drones over Jordan, coming after me, singing of the crimes of man. I've got those Anthropocene blues. Well, I looked into my crystal ball, and what did I see? Ghosts of the extincted ones coming after me. A heap of trouble coming after me. Karma, 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 can't buck it. Karma, 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 we've done it. Manifest destiny, mano, mano, manifester destiny. Well, I looked into my crystal ball, what did I see? Plastostoma snails wiped out by a cement factory. Singing of the crimes of man. I got those Anthropocene blues. Walk lightly. Walk lightly, tread gently, singing those Anthropocene blues. Looked into the crystal ball, what did I see? Cadres of human beings taken to the streets. Cadres of humans changing the frequency, waking up to the Anthropocene blues. Apotropaic. Could be punk, sexed, disinherited, could be henna-haired, and extremely professional, pursued by darker demons, curling the extra dimensions into kalabi yaw spaces, is no small feat. Rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat, rat-tat-tat-tat-tat, could be moraines from the Ice Age, could be passenger pigeons, could be Ectotopistus migratorius, the migratory wanderer. Could be a blow dryer for the art people. Well, it could be. Could be. Could be spin filigree, the filibuster. Could be the attention to grace and pierce through a glint of writing. Could be a fatwa following you around. Could be a report on the radioactive metal. Could be the McCarthy transcripts you cut up on the transatlantic voyage singing, down, down with a father. People knocked you over and your courage folded. I know you soldier on, oh my neighbors. I know you go into exile. I know you progressives see what people are made of. Born on the cusp I was born to. And sweeping the broom more frantically now. Size of the loops of the spiral of any life. The way electrical and magnetic fields flow through them. Rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat. Could be manipulative child. She's sure, unsure her power is worthy of her attitude of small town ageist. Pop it higher out of these small winded ones. Subvert the schadenfreude of our time. Tonight, the two leaders attend the ballet as chemical agents are sprayed on a variety of ships and their crews. Operation Shipboard Hazard and Defense are busy using sarin, a nerve agent, or VX, a nerve gas, or streptococcal enterotoxin B. This is my hot, cold war epic. Remind me to report back to you. Hedges of thorns on the child's dream. Rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat. Rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat. Rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat. Dirge South. So this, recalling these events, this last summer, this awful massacre in South Carolina. South in the spectrum events, murderous events. Good South, the longer warrior, not bad South. Get ready for hell. Untethered hatred, sky aflame, stars aligned for the non-rational, despondent map down under a long forgiving, and then reckoning long, long. Who forgive? Would she, would they forgive? Mothers and fathers forgive. See the big picture. Ethno-historical days, as some we do holy ritual. Ritual and turning, we do secular ritual turning. We continue, you dear, dear murderer. This is domestic terrorism. Body, holy blackness, holy, holy, holy blackness, holy, holy dark continent in the cross dream of liberation. But there, in collective, grown longer, longer grown vision, prehistory. You want psyche, you cross a world together, sing of victims and crime. You curse, you will not sing, must not sing. And must sing it down, sing centuries unmitigated, disaster, arrive at 100-year plan, 1,000-year plan, withers without your spirit, and all go down, and all go down, and all go down, and all go down, and these white bodies go down, any room for poetry, any room. What time? Sorry, 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 hominid. Oh, sorry, sorry, walls you are up against. Oh, all, oh, murder, detail, all of it. Emmanuel, oh, come, Emmanuel. Could tell rupture, scream, what next sing? Could tell it's over us and all go down. Come over us, Emmanuel, leader. Minister, senator, young man dead in his time, lay in blood, washed in the blood, unsolved, rip again, structure of rip, rip, the architectures that won't work, then rip. Then what? Renewal, saints in heaven, the disappearing erased, and the saints in heaven, and the saints in heaven, down on their knees for this. Apotheosis, the nine, assumption of bodies, too familiar, lift innocence. When you go to slaughter, broke down into violence, degeneration. This is domestic terrorism up against and pressuring brain and mount, ghosts begging for light, mount in the heat, pile up layers of atrocity in the house of the Lord. What law will bind, hold back slaughter of innocence? Oh, you syndicates of samsara, breed genocide, proud genocide flag of murderer insignias and shells of hatred, proud to wear by the weak and damned room for poetry. This is domestic terrorism. The nine, Cynthia Hurd, 54, Susie Jackson, 87, Ethel Lance, 70, Reverend DePayne Middleton, Doctor, 49, Honorable Reverend Clementa Pinckney, 41, Tywanza Sanders, 26, Reverend Daniel Simmons, Sr., 74, Reverend Sharonda Singleton, 45, Myra Thompson, 39. For rest, for succor arrive, and when they say never coming, then arrive, eruption of chaos, then arrive, blood and twin to the universe, always, always chaos arrive. How many guns can you buy today, locked in a cabin's chaos, like fever, a cosmos of endarkenment? Mark this, mine or yours, turning around as word in mouth sobs to get out, take off, sob me a river. Language is biodegradable. Come south, gone south, rotted man taking it down. Legion of terrorism, this land infernal. Descent, inborn, wake up, arrive. Insulated, never. American soil, racial soil, saturated with the race of the blood tribe. Africa on the way. These are the holders. Will hold, they will hold. Oh, hold, oh, blessings. Oh, dark lamb, come, come, hold. Come, oh, dark lamb, help me, Jesus. Help us, Jesus, whatever. Whatever, help us, Buddha, help us, Yahweh, help us, Muhammad, help us, dark lamb on the way. Let's see. There's something here. This is called Off Worlds, and it's from a much longer piece called Voices, Daughter of a Heart Yet to Be Born. Off Worlds. How come untethered back to command or plan, the cult of glitches? Disperse, boss of all patterns, organize your original beauty. Civil engineers as angels don the DNA on a slip. Fez on night shift, invader leptons themselves in the come down. Not body-based theory, but another accounts for dignity. The greatest moments in Russian history as told by an activist, for example, her century needed her. Or your medieval cities arise. Not privative pathology, not a performance in arms that becomes flammable, an essay of twin truism and survival. No, no, not that. Not that, the clericalisms, the nails of martyrdom, bullets come in sizes, not flag signals to make our deletions work, how you might live on expanding your code from stress points of memory, how this is normal. I dreamed this. I drugged this. I was an anthology considering conceptual possibilities in the economic downturn. I carried many others. Where shelter? A mind stream presents itself, cool water, a tidal pool of future entity, an intellectual conundrum on micro-overt consciousness, a makeshift abbreviation or torrent of semantic power that can be translated into delectable things to imbibe as our journey continues. Consider unmateriality, its textures, its playful carders. How secular can you get before you are back in cement on the floor praying religion? It was a city built from the bottom of a bowl, then tipped over the edges. It built itself an ever-flowing warren of pathways, an echo of neural exchange and Medina power. You could buy, you could sell, you could buy, buy. You might sell, sell, you could buy, sell, sell, buy. You could study and be the subtlest thinker of all past and future times. The future was struggle. The future was taking off. If one could describe and scribe and fasten around the old days, the old code. prose could fashion a fluid Arabic that no crimes be committed. Do not poison the Nazarene, I swear this. Crush identity, a creature in error, never perfect victims in the long performance of an afternoon cruelty we will escape from. I promise, escape autocracy, plutocracy. I am just the blockbuster for you. To Deleuze, you say gracias. To the other, you whisper your need for cross-cultural genres to slide into the semantic mix. I will spell it right this time, you say, biting your ADD tongue, your autistic nerve reversal. You are unwilling to walk alone on hot sand. You want a new cosmology, cooler, less insistent. Even demand of instant becomes obsolete, though moments still be grand. This is our moment! Be uttered as in a cone of archive. Can you work without sun over you warming you or survive deep in the red luminescent ocean floor without a bell jar? How will you be recognized human without a war? The not knowing one language, one knows all the possibilities of sensation of instant relays suggest a story. Tell me what it is. Tell me your tactics for this liftoff, this send-off, as they wave their multi-activated tentacles, one for every day of the year, although that calendar resists use when the frequency marginalizes all those old strategies. You were an octopus or saint of imagination. Take your pick, but not planning. That was a word that we dismissed long ago. Strategy. It was male. It was war. It was not making progress. It was tied to scheming or a miserable plot of critical lingo takeover. It was tied to make artists singing to themselves in a circle howl and to have the moon take notice. Please, cold, dead moon, take notice as we imitate your borrowed night. It was a drumming ritual. It was a plaintive wail. She was busy, busy at the inexplicable, busy at the ready, still arguing, but in a new psychic way. A bifurcation, a city masking a disillusionment with your culture, the city living, transportation problems unsolved, but going up. Yeah, you going up, 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 is it? Maybe it is like poetry, a long thigh bone incised with tiny runes that give meaning to perseverance, to walking with children slung at back, and sirens wail and tell of meltdowns. Let's go off-world, she thinks. This is how I will travel. How will I be? Lift, lift up. She was suddenly in the upside-down cup of her life, held and safe and covered with cloth, a blue, blue cloth, and it was a bowl she could see out of, surrounded by glass. It was other world looking in. And then there's a jaded relapse and shatter in another war. This is pedestrian. How can we ever return to the complex thigh-bone meditation? The tableau changes all over the planet as coasts give way, as empires tremble and fall or reconstitute even more implacably, and powers build towers to organize by. But that changes. You know that changes. You know that changes. And then... just going to read two little bits from recent books. This is from Jaguar Harmonics, which is a little, some Yahe notes. Edenic brain, inebriant one, sun, 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 person woven of monoliths, may be mirror glass, person of a mirage that would be fate of all ancestor scries, person that is a core of galaxy, our milky path of poetics of influence, bricolage of sensibility made for future fur bits, person woven of monoliths still standing but fall down, and you can't just go around killing and conquering persons, you can't just take them out at midnight and rape and slaughter and kill persons. Build it, Pleiades said, feeling alone. I, he wasn't singing your vision, dreaming alone person, alone. Curandero wasn't singing your vision in. Pleiades wasn't singing it in. I, sending it in. I, Curandero, sing it in. Call upon you, Pleiades, sing it in. You alone sitting, crumbled, crumpled. I, and what is best for this? And into the crystal mirror, into the sky. See, and what is best for you? Sink down to send it and down your crystal person, a chip so small of ember growing to size of Saturn, person woven of flames of tension, jaded, see the souvenir of person, 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 quick to see person slower in step, asp of hope, serpent's aspiration, mental it, hey, cool down a sorcerer's misery, person woven of pivots, a con of ego and flaws of end time, madre says, you old gal, matters all, sang a madre and snag a madre, just as the circle remains, madre, sue madre, and says, we don't like it, don't do it, don't like it, don't do it, don't do it, hydraulic fracturing, hey, shattering under you, don't do it, don't do it, person woven of performing sutras, don't do it, the thunder said don't do it, and symmetry said hey, and gambles to the flight of the asteroid. Person woven of nimble words, mere fractions of them, of ag and ar and ra as antidote to gloom, ag, ar, ra, ra, ag, ar, ra, ra, woven of white poppy, gar, ra, na, sa, 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 ma, 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 whist, 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 hey. Of the power of the centaur's heel, woven by a poet in the sky above you, person woven of spheres enclosing spheres, person woven of Morse code of digitizing distance now, and gambles to the flight of the asteroid, trajectory thinking distance now, and of the nimbus of a swerve as if it could move light years, but it already happened, but it hasn't happened yet, not yet. Did it light year a gap? Hey, rapido me, rapido, lucid inside vision, what men might be being. Men might be being in the new frequencies, being in the new forgiveness, you equal in space beyond time continuum for adventure mission. Men miss out in the mission, in the fission of not listening to crack the code. If not listening, then forcing their fiction might be aquatic or might say pesky and blue and rooted. What are the roots? A down, hey, do, oh, do, down, a down, dairy, down, be my pesky, a down through the earth. And they might be male in studying topsoil better, be being in ground weird and being our better, our ire in better star. Gazing, rooted in the light that never quite reaches, that already happened, it hasn't happened yet. Perpetrator, and if you were a perpetrator, if you were a male of a particular order, you could wear bird feathers. I would help you to put them on. I would help you with your accoutrements. I would hand you the accoutrements at the proper intervals of accoutrement necessity, and then you were finally beautiful. I would give your voice a lilt and a rise. I would bounce you with you, bounce, you could enter the realm of the guardians, we pay debts in parcels of light, it is a good idea, crossing lines, and they be ever best, you sound the lines, oh, cross of gender line, yes, cross gender line in muddy nothing, muddy something, mud twig mold realm, you, oh, you inherit the earth, and earth inherit you, and lines pull down, dram drum across a dress of twig and mud, oh, kundry mouth, oh, kundry body, ancient of drams, of wolfram of, oh, Parsifal of, oh, loathly damsel hag offers the hero drink from golden cup, her golden cup, drink elixirs of knowledge, vision, crossing dress, oh, kundry dress up, would be like to be a kundry doll, little obstacle, as ancestors wide open in the earth, and she, did she arrive, did she arrive to me, and did she say, rive it through, did she say, rive it through, hydraulic fracturing, hey, don't like it, don't do it. To oscillate with my Ginsburg, my Burroughs, is a wave, a component, a single in frequency, oscillate, Cepheid variable star, as below, so above, part of this world, with Burroughs, yah, hey, with Ginsburg, yah, hey, I sang a lump little fellow, and to the curandero sang and sang. Maestro jungle outskirts Pucallpa behind the gas work field talks a lot. Power curing cooks the universe together. Curing takes a lot to drink. Over the cup mouth I rose, and Ramon came forth, an old crooner, shooting star, Ariolito. Full moon, I swerved up first, breaking over the cup mouth. Over the cup mouth, I rose, and the whole fucking cosmos broke loose around me. Mosquitoes vomiting, silly to make this a note, a puff of smoke note. Mere death and real death. Real, real death, all covered with snake-like snake seraph, colored serpents and oriole. I sang with my Ginsburg, I sang with my Burroughs. Bastante curandero, heart rayed with spectral presences was what I got. Reproduction of the last physical move, coiling in black hole of God knows. Over the cup mouth I rose, ancestor, stronger and stronger in language, a being laying back on her back, her jaguar spine. Peer into mystery, it's caused all creation present the weave back itself without colored, all real time, real, real, real time of our movie, only image I threw myself upon. So real, I said, so real, real phantom woven witness, recovery of darkness to light. What I thought was great mind was false. I felt somewhat like the eye is imaginary. Predator jaguar was the crashing jaguar hissing, a woo! And the eye was seeing through itself, singing mysterious things. That was our fate in the dawn house, and humming, balam, balam, leave my body to be found in the luminous morning. I'm going to close with just a few lines from Archive, section from Gossa Murmur, which is a book about fighting for and struggling for poetry's archive, oral archive, and all the important archives we need to keep going so people in the future, if there are some and they aren't just slime molds in the future, will know we weren't all just killing one another. I know this from Derrida. Archive is shelter. Archive is the disembodied voice of a palpable consciousness. Archive is a jumbled dream. Archive needs poetry. You must never forget. Archive is inscription, is aspiration, tells many stories. I am Archon, and a mere inscripted postcard is archive. When we return to our speech and start our own country, take this as directive. Memory of an animal is also yours. Archive, all opposable thumbs we have record of, and many wisdom identities. Archive's murmur circulates around the room. Archive lets originals breathe. You can't tamper with the archive. It's a strange cosmology. Archive is antithesis to war on memory, and stealing poet fire is the tender foot. Will not tread on the footprints of the most vulnerable. Archive is trust. Let archive record the names of those going out of this world. Tristan, Albatross, all disappeared, all suicided. Archive listens into the margins. Archive is a privileged topology. Archive exists as a map of the future beyond the exigencies of electronic media, which has transformed the relative reality of Homo sapiens sapiens. If you are good at this, please memorize. Are you good at this? Memorize archive. Archive could be safe from composite strife. A far agent, a forest, a mountain to climb, an orange sunset, a cloth for the body, strong ropes to circle and carry, dynamite with an app for soil content, app to read constellations in the sky. Moon, a fingernail above you is a modest proposal, and sometimes a wildebeest on the tundra remembers a former life, and an albatross crossed your shadow at sea one day. Tristan, whose name means sadness, quested the grail and drank a love potion. This is the sublimated test of future identity. Identity, t, 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 t. Identity, t, 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 t. Identity, t, 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 Thank you, Woodstock.
I want to thank all four poets, Woodstock Guild, and Jackie and the Golden Notebook. And thank you all for coming.
Yeah, but go ahead.